Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the belated voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Belated indeed, Matthew, and it's entirely your fault.
It is my fault. Yes, apologies that we weren't on air last week. We were going to be. We had a big bumper Easter special lined up, didn't we? It's why we weren't on in the beginning of the week. And we thought, do you know what? We're going to do it on Thursday and take in everything and provide our listeners with an epic show. Mm. As is, I fell slightly ill.
Mm. You got greedy. That's what happened. You got greedy. You were offered a Milan derby. You couldn't say no. You at the expense of the listener, you decided to go to Italy for a night to watch one game of football, and it's now cost you a week.
It really has. I picked up some form of Milanese bug. But in my defense, yes, I did go to Milan, but the San Siro is a stadium that I'd always wanted to go to, and they are ripping it down. I think this summer. It is quite old now, but it still is quite an incredible stadium. So I don't regret it. It was quite the trip. I was offered a ticket and a hotel stay. So I thought, this is the only opportunity, really, that I'm going to get to go and see the Milan derby in the San Siro semi-finals of the Coppa Italia second leg. The first leg was 0-0. You thought, this is going to be an absolute contest of death. And it was a good game. A good game. To be fair, I was going as well for the podcast because I was able to look at Mike Maignan, the AC Milan goalkeeper who we've spoken about on this podcast before, and Samir Handanovic, another goalkeeper we've spoken about on this podcast before too, and a couple of decent performances, you'd have to say, I think.
Yeah, well, the final score was 3-0, I'm right in saying.
It was 3-0.
And the goalkeepers played well.
Handanovic made, I'd say, three very good stops in the first half. I think the third of which actually led to the second goal scored by Martinez, Lautaro Martinez. Mike Maignan was extremely advanced throughout the entire game. I know that that is a natural goalkeeper position now, but he seemed way out of his goal. There were a couple of times actually when the Inter Milan players spotted him off his line and tried to, you know, lob him from inside their own half. It didn't come off, but very adept with both feet, Maignan. Thought he looked pretty confident. Didn't abide by the goalkeepers' union, though, after the game. Just walked straight off the pitch. Didn't give Handanovic a shake of the hand. But Handanovic now, what a goalkeeper. 38 this year. Just a pretty flawless performance, I'd say. Just an all-round, dependable, solid goalkeeper.
Excellent. So you went all the way to Milan for that minute's worth of analysis that we've just got there.
I did. And those are the lengths we go to here on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, my friend.
Indeed. Absolutely. Well, yeah, we did miss last week, as you say. So that does mean that we have got a even more of a bumper episode. I feel like I've been going through the clips this morning and refreshing my mind on some of the things that have happened over the last week. We're going to be discussing three or four Nick Pope games from what I can see.
Yep, some Nick Pope, some Fraser Forster, David De Gea, Jordan Pickford, David Raya, Aaron Ramsdale, all sorts coming up from the Premier League, the EFL too. We won't be going back through everything from the podcasts that we didn't do purely because it would take far too long. So we've just cherry-picked some of those best bits from the past 10 days or so. We've got Clean Sheet Club. We've got an interesting point made by Martin Samuel, the Mail Online journalist, who made some comments about number one and number two goalkeepers and when you choose to use them throughout the season. So we'll speak about that at the end of the show. We've also got some correspondence. So I'm going to start with that because we've had a WhatsApp in.
Okay.
This one was from H, who lives in Stanmore, actually. So not far from our old neck of the woods. And H says, hi, Matt and Richard. Dislocated my finger yesterday, so re-listening to the last couple of episodes for entertainment. Really like the stuff about constructed media narratives, partly because of a media A-level lurking in my past and partly because the constant picking at Pickford really annoys me. And it leads to the whole circular argument of, I don't like him, therefore everything he does is weird. He's weird, therefore I don't like him. I just wish people would judge on actual gameplay rather than getting hung up on him pulling faces or whatever. Maybe I take it a bit personally due to my own experience. I have ADHD and accidentally do things which rub people up the wrong way, which is hugely frustrating. The phrase Everton in the Championship was definitely giving me slight palpitations, even though technically my Prem team is Arsenal, the women's team are my local WSL team, so adopted the men too. I've seen a couple of rumours that Spurs are after Pickford, but I'm selfishly hoping it's just talk. Been watching Everton a lot this season and definitely have a bit of a soft spot for them, especially after going up there for the FA Cup game against Boreham Wood FC, going to their Watford game too. Now it's been rearranged, seat near the corner flag for observation purposes. But an interesting note there from H just about the perception of Pickford, something that we're going to be getting into on the pod.
We are, and actually more in regards to Aaron Ramsdale, because there's been some, I suppose there's some similarities here in terms of how a goalkeeper decides to keep goal, how they decide to be as a persona, which I think to a large extent now, and it's almost the, I suppose, the expression fake it till you make it, where you can design who you want to be as a goalkeeper. And I think there's so many different types of characters out there currently, some, and also so varying in their styles, from the kind of cool, calm, collected Edison to the all-action hero, which might be a Pickford, an Aaron Ramsdale, to something in the middle, you know, maybe a Kasper Schmeichel, who is very calm in everything that he does, but he does have that edge to him where certainly if you're not on it, he'll let you know. So I think when we're looking at Pickford Ramsdale, I think what you tend to find is that pundits will often have in their mind, and it'll be completely subconscious, they'll have an idea as to what they believe a goalkeeper should be. That's in their mind, what they see a goalkeeper to be. Now, Aaron Ramsdale and Jordan Pickford at the moment, and I'm grouping them together. I know they're very different in many of their attributes and many of the way in which they decide to keep goal. But I'll group them together for the fact that they are both quite animated. Now, what you'll tend to find is that I would argue most pundits don't see that as their goalkeeper. Most pundits will have played ordinarily in a team many years ago, and there weren't many Aaron Ramsdale, Jordan Pickford type characters back then. You know, you look at a lot of the goalkeepers that played, we often go back to Peter Schmeichel, David Seaman, and Nigel Martin. You know, all of these characters, all very different, but certainly none of them played the game in the way that Jordan Pickford or Aaron Ramsdale do, where they are actively winding up the opposition. You're seeing the smiles, you're seeing a bit of character coming from them. And because of that, it's then very easy to assess a goalkeeper in a negative way, because instantly it's kind of like, I suppose, going back to a real psychological one, people like themselves. You know, if you're similar to me, there'll be a reason that we'll be like-minded in a lot of ways, and naturally you will like that other person because you'll see things in a similar way. That applies here, because if you're seeing a goalkeeper that just does not align to what you want a goalkeeper to be, then you will find the negative. And that's another psychological one. Like, you know, if you look for something, you will find it. A goalkeeper can have the best game, but you find that one moment that isn't quite so good, you will really focus in on that moment as opposed to just taking it for what it is and actually looking at the moments individually. And I agree. I think that when it comes to Pickford in particular, people do tend to do that. They do tend to really focus in on the things that maybe aren't so good, but there are a lot of good things going on.
Okay, good stuff. H, thank you very much for that WhatsApp. If you'd like to get in touch with us like H did, very easy to do so. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net or on our phone number 07503673020. On with the show?
Let's do it.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, starting in the Premier League as per, we are going to focus initially on Nick Pope and Fraser Forster, Richard. We'll start with Nick Pope, whose recent form has been very, very decent. It took him a little while, didn't it, with that knee injury towards the back end of last season. And I suppose we could just focus on the three games without Sean Dyche. He's been good before that, but in the three games after Sean Dyche, that's 14 shots faced, one conceded, but just commanding. He's looking strong, he's looking confident, and making some very, very good saves.
Yeah, some massive saves, as you say. And this is the time of the season that you'll often see a character of a goalkeeper come out. You know, it is a very difficult time of the season, and it's one that I guess you can view in very different ways. But certainly the way that Nick Pope seems to have taken it on board is that real challenge. You know, you'd have said a week or two back that Burnley certainly wasn't looking too good for them to stay in the Premier League. And as of recording, certainly they're in a strong position again with the results over the last week or so. And he's been a massive part of that. And I think from a goalkeeper's point of view, if you're playing with that kind of mentality, that kind of energy, it will feed throughout the team. You know, you're making those big saves in the big moments. And as you say, looking as strong and commanding as he does, that is going to make a huge difference. And no, I thought the three games in particular that we're going to focus on, he's made huge saves in all three of those games. And certainly to get it was two victories, wasn't out the three, has, like I say, given them a really, really good chance. So just to mention one of the say, loads of saves in the three games that I could talk about, but there was one in particular I like, low to his right, that's bounced just in front, and he's ended up scooping it up and away against West Ham. And it was just for the fact that I thought his footwork was excellent. Makes a decision that he can't come for the cross. You can see he takes a step forward, which I don't mind. You know, you have that look. Can I come for the cross? No, I can't. The moment he doesn't, it's that retreat to his line. Read the play very well, gets himself down to his right very quickly and kind of scoops the ball away. Top, top save. But it was more the footwork that really made this save. But as you say, in all three games, he's made massive saves and they've certainly given themselves a chance.
So Fraser Forster as well here. We spoke about him extensively on the previous two podcasts. There was the game with Arsenal that we were going to include in the last show that didn't happen, but inspired again in that one. Some incredible stops. Made a decent stop yesterday as well in their draw with Brighton. He, like Nick Pope, and this is where we can get into the England debate, I suppose, which you could argue isn't as crucial as it would have been in previous summers, because normally we'd have the World Cup in waiting. Like last season, we had the Euros that we were leading into, so the form of the goalkeepers was so important then. The World Cup now isn't until winter. So if you're Nick Pope, if you're Fraser Forster, you're probably thinking, do you know what? I wish it was the summer now, because I might have a better chance of staking my claim. If their form continues, maybe they will. But it's such an interesting debate now, because you've got, and we always have this debate when it comes to England goalkeepers, but you've got your Jordan Pickford and now an Aaron Ramsdale who you lump into that category of goalkeeper. And then you have the Nick Pope and the Fraser Forster, who I think it's fair to say are a similar-ish type of goalkeeper, and they're not known as a ball-playing goalkeeper. They're known as the older style of goalkeeper, the bigger, the commanding, the more solid and dependable goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think it's not got a lot to do with how this season finishes. It's going to be to do with how next season starts. You know, who has the best first couple of months. Here's another one for you. If Burnley were to stay up, which will be largely down to Nick Pope, and Everton were to go down, which on the back of our conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago, does that then give Nick Pope an even better chance of playing ahead of Jordan Pickford, given that Jordan Pickford could be playing his trade in the Championship, as we mentioned before? So, yeah, look, there's so much to this conversation. Realistically, it's probably a conversation we'll put on hold until September time. And I think at that point, we'll see who is playing regularly in the Premier League, at what level they're playing, how they start the season. And I think it will be a really, really interesting debate. But I think the thing at the moment, look, Jordan Pickford is the outright number one. It will just be fascinating to see how the next few weeks play out. And again, going back to the conversation we had before, if they are relegated, which is a serious possibility given the fixtures they've got left this season, does that give the likes of Fraser Forster, Aaron Ramsdale, Nick Pope, even a Dean Henderson if he were to start next season, Alex McCarthy, I know I've missed one or two out here, Sam Johnstone potentially if he gets himself back to the Premier League, does that suddenly give them much more of a chance if Jordan Pickford is in the Championship?
Yeah, okay. To be fair, I think it's worth noting as well that Jordan Pickford hasn't been playing particularly bad. I don't think he has. Anyway, yesterday in the Merseyside derby, actually, they didn't go short at all, Everton. Every bit of distribution was long. But in that, every bit of his distribution was very good too. He was always hitting the area. So I don't think he's been playing bad, but it is a conversation, of course, that will be had once next season starts. Let's move on to Arsenal 3, Manchester United 1. An eventful afternoon for Aaron Ramsdale and David De Gea. We'll go with Ramsdale first.
Yeah, it was an interesting afternoon, which it seems like every game that Aaron Ramsdale plays now is an interesting afternoon. And certainly, you know, I have a lot of information come through on like my Google alerts and what have you every day. And there's more Aaron Ramsdale stories, I think, than any other goalkeeper. And I think the fact that he is building this character, which we've mentioned many times on this podcast, but we're seeing it more and more and more. If anything, he's amplifying it. Certainly in recent weeks, I feel like the more that we're seeing of this character that he's building, he is going to make more and more headlines because he is going to be a talking point in a lot of games, which it does feel like at the moment, whether it's good or bad from the pundits, there is an Aaron Ramsdale talking point. And certainly in terms of his performance, some great things. Again, certainly the touch on the post, excellent save, is near post, a couple of very good takes in particular. A lot of his distribution was good again. The talking points that maybe aren't so positive will be, could he have done more to affect the goal? Which I do want to talk about that because I know the punditry at the time, people questioned whether he could have done a little bit more. I think the term no man's land was used. Now, the ball was whipped in. Ronaldo's finished it from about 6 yards. Aaron Ramsdale gets to about 4.5 and then tries to spread. I've got no issue with this because I think a lot of the time when the ball's whipped across the six, sometimes, although textbook you're told to turn, be on your line, give yourself some reaction time and try and make the save. The truth is, if they're shooting from 6 yards, it's going to be very difficult to react anyway. So actually, if you can get to 4 or 5 yards and try and create a block, this might make a lot more sense. So I don't really have any issue with the decision he made and even the execution. I think at the point of Ronaldo actually getting his foot to it, Aaron Ramsdale's not in a terrible position and a lot of days he might make that save. Now, as it was a very good finish from Ronaldo and it ended in a goal. The reason that people question, and again, this will be from pundits that won't necessarily know exactly what they're seeing, is the way in which he did move to the ball. It looked a little bit indecisive. His limbs were all over the place. It looked a bit frantic. And at that point, when he actually does get there, because the movement wasn't all that smooth, naturally pundits are looking at it and they're asking the question, could he have been a little bit more in control? Could he have maybe cut out the cross? Was it the right decision to come? Whereas actually, you know, in my opinion, I think the decision to get close to it, try and block it, wasn't a bad one. I think it was more aesthetically, you know, how it looked when he went out there just didn't look all that in control, which is, you know, I guess now when we're talking about Aaron Ramsdale, that's going to be something that will get labelled against him in other areas because he does play with a certain energy, which look, Arsenal fans are going to absolutely love, but it is the all-action hero. I use that again where he's coming for big crosses. You know, some of the distribution, it's a real show. When he's screaming at defenders, it really is so animated. Now, this actually comes back to the great email that we had in at the start of the show, the correspondence there, because again, it goes back to that. It's kind of, what is your idea of a goalkeeper? Now, I've got my idea. No doubt you've got yours, and we've all got an individual idea as to what our goalkeeper is. A lot won't fit into what Aaron Ramsdale is creating. It is quite different from what we've seen before. I'm trying to think of goalkeepers in the past that we could liken to him, but I think we're playing with this kind of energy and, you know, getting in Fernandez's face when he misses the penalty, or the stuff that he's doing to the Chelsea fans at their place, or to the Leicester fans not so long ago. Like, he will end up becoming the pantomime villain, and maybe he's okay with being that. A lot of outfield players have been that in the past, your Robbie Savages, etc. He will end up becoming that. Now, is that okay? Is it not? Look, yeah, it's completely subjective. Some will absolutely love it. The Arsenal fans absolutely love it. The big question is the people that maybe are making decisions, how will they see it? You know, the likes of a Gareth Southgate, will they care that he's becoming that character, or will they actually quite like that?
It's a really interesting argument, isn't it? Because there is no right or wrong way to be a goalkeeper, right? That's partly why we do this podcast, because of the perceptions that goalkeepers are a specific type of person, a specific type of breed, and that doesn't really exist anymore. And what I like as a goalkeeper, what you've just asked there, to be honest, I was thinking about this over the weekend. I don't really know, because I was looking at Fraser Forster and I thought, yeah, I love that. I love the big, massive goalkeeper. But do I? Is that what I really want to do? What I really like? I don't know. Since we started doing this show, I think, you know, it's opened my eyes up to many different assets of what a goalkeeper can be. And I think with Ramsdale, the other interesting thing is that he is very much a modern goalkeeper, but you said about who we could liken him to just there. I think he's also a bit of a throwback as well, because he's a bit like a Bruce Grobbelaar. He's a bit like a John Burridge, for example, doing all of those different types of crazy antics on the pitch. And that is something that a lot of fans like. And Ben Foster always said to us, didn't he? Play with a smile. Mm. It's not that important. Play with a smile and enjoy the game. So if anything, that is what he's doing.
And this is where then it sort of challenges me on a bit of a personal level, because it's, you know, you grow up learning how to play in goal, and you grow up being taught from goalkeeper coaches and people that you idolise as to how the position should be, how you should feel when you let in a bad goal, or you make a mistake, or you make a great save, or so on and so forth. And actually, what you're seeing now, and it's not just Aaron Ramsdale on this, it's a lot of the goalkeepers you're seeing, it is a very different mentality. And there is so much that I do really like about it, because the whole thing is, and we've said for a long time on this podcast, is that we want more younger people to become goalkeepers. My biggest worry about punditry in this country is that it will put off young kids wanting to become goalkeepers because it is so uneducated. Whereas actually, when you're seeing someone like an Aaron Ramsdale, young goalkeepers will fall in love with that personality. You know, your Ben Fosters, your Jordan Pickfords. Then you've got your other types of characters, as we mentioned, your cool, calm, collected, etc. Maybe it is that. Maybe we need this real range, and we should really embrace it if it's going to have a more positive impact on younger goalkeepers coming through. And that's where I suppose I'm really wary that it is so subjective. And we'll probably refer back to the correspondence that we had a few times in this show, because, you know, you just mentioned another name there, and we didn't really go into detail about Fraser Forster, but you're right, he's had a few fantastic games. But when you watch him, that challenges what you think about goalkeeping as well, because of course he's a very different looking goalkeeper. He's so big and he uses his size so well. Some of the saves he made against Arsenal in particular, goalkeepers, or not many goalkeepers, can make those types of saves. But there are times that he looks a bit ungainly, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's just how we've got in our mind what we'd like a save to look like. And that's where David De Gea then excels, because he looks so fluid, and those top hand saves he makes, sometimes an absolute thing of beauty. A lot of the times you'll watch Fraser Forster, it won't necessarily be as attractive as you see the save, however it's just as effective, you know. And I yeah, no, it's a conversation that we could go into even more depth on. I know we've got a lot of games to cover on this podcast, so probably best we don't go into too much detail. But yeah, look, I think in terms of Aaron Ramsdale's performance and where he's heading, this season's been fascinating. You know, huge credit to him. Last season was tough, finished the season strongly. This season, he's now had a real roller coaster, majority of which has been very, very positive. The press that he's got, you know, someone has said at this stage in the season, he would have had the amount of positive press that he's had, he would have taken it. I'm sure everyone would have taken it. I am just fascinated to see where it goes with Aaron Ramsdale. Is he going to now forge a new type of goalkeeper that we see coming through? Because I think he's got the power to do that. I think being the type of character he is, and if he maintains this, which I get the impression he will, regardless of whether people approve or don't approve, I can see a lot of goalkeepers coming through wanting to be the next Aaron Ramsdale.
We mentioned David De Gea there. Before we get on to him and his soft hands, so says Glenn Hoddle, you also mentioned punditry. So very, very quickly, there was a game in midweek involving Chelsea and Arsenal. Arsenal won 4-2 at Stamford Bridge. The first equaliser from Timo Werner. Just your perspective on the punditry here. I think it was Paul Merson, wasn't it, who was the main culprit?
Mm. Yeah, go on. Do you have the actual line that he said?
I don't have the full words here, but it was a lot about being flat-footed, wasn't it? And the deflection and the defenders being furious with him. And when they showed it in slow motion, no, that's in real time.
Yeah. No, it was, yeah, look, I mean, it wasn't the most, it wasn't the most intelligent analysis. And the thing is, I can relate to this one. So I always remember, and no one else will remember this, I remember a goal that I conceded at Gresty Road back in the day.
Oh, wow.
For Alexandra, yeah, lost 3-0. We were actually doing really well at the time. But I remember it was one of these days, it was really, really windy. Someone's hit a shot from the edge of the box. I couldn't for the life of me see it until it was 6 yards out, at which point I've dived fully and it's gone in about 2 yards from the post and what have you. It's only when I saw it back on the camera later, saw it back on the film later, that I was like, wow, that is a terrible, terrible goal to concede. It looked atrocious. But I remember in the time, because I couldn't see it, and I only ended up seeing it 6-7 yards out, I had no chance. But I'm watching it back thinking, that looks dreadful. You might be able to dig it out from somewhere, I'm sure. It's a shame we don't have our Twitter, because then you could put it up. And it does. It looks horrendous. But then I know 100% I had no chance of saving it. And it reminds me of this one because it's taken deflection, it's spinning, it's moving. Aaron Ramsdale's only seen it really, really late, at which point he reacts and he dives fully and he can't get there, which says to me he cannot make this save. Again, he's got this certain nature where it is real, I suppose, like jerky movements, in that it does look a bit rushed. But again, that's just the way that he keeps goal. That's not necessarily a bad thing. The question comes back to, can he make the save or not in that particular moment? No, I don't think he can. Or certainly no, I don't think he's expected to. Now, can he make the save? Potentially another day he manages to get a good hand and put it around the post. I know that there's a few people looking at it maybe thinking that he was almost trying to make it look better than it was. I don't agree with that. I actually think it was just more a case of he hasn't seen it till really late. It's spinning wickedly because of the deflection. And because of that, he just couldn't quite get there. Now, of course, the defenders are going to have a little moan up because they're not seeing it how he's seeing it. They're seeing it from 20 yards out. The people that are complaining, 20 yards out, and they've just seen it go quite slow and go past him. So from their perspective, yeah, of course, they think he might be able to do a little bit better. However, if they're seeing it from the goalkeeper's perspective and realizing he cannot see the ball until very late, then no, he doesn't have a chance, which I guess will move us on quite nicely to the David De Gea one as well, which was also baffling commentary on that one too.
Yeah, quite remarkable commentary. We'll get onto that in a second. Let's just talk about his performance first as a whole. He's going to get Player of the Year again, isn't he, at United? What will that be, the fifth time that he's got it, I think?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I think it is. Yeah, and credit to him. I think after, you know, I don't want to repeat ourselves too much on this, but certainly after the last couple of years he's had, to bounce back and do that is huge.
That save he made, Eddie Nketiah, I think it was, that was about, I don't know, 12 yards out, absolutely rocketed at him. Yeah, it wasn't in one of the corners, which had it been in the corner either side of him, it would have been a goal. But a nice height, said Glenn Hoddle. I know that's an old one that we've spoken about so many times, but even that one there, I mean, wow, the velocity of that shot, the reactions to be able to get your hand up just alone to put it away is just unbelievable. Brilliant save that was. Yeah, the soft hands comment was quite funny. But the goal, the third goal scored by Granit Xhaka. And there are a couple of occasions this weekend, we'll get onto another one a bit later involving AFC Wimbledon, I cannot get my head around the punditry and how they can't seem to fathom why these goals shouldn't have been given. Because this, for me, was just 100% offside. And fair play to Rio Ferdinand, who was saying to both Peter Walton and Martin Keown, it's offside. He's offside. Yeah, but Victor Lindelof, I don't care about Victor Lindelof. Eddie Nketiah has stood behind him. It's offside.
Yeah, it was bizarre. And actually, you kind of felt like they're going to go over to the referee, and the moment they do that, that'll clear this all up and we'll all be good again. And he didn't. He didn't see it. It's like, it's an absolute irrelevance. So for those that haven't seen it, effectively, David De Gea has had to lean half a yard to his right-hand side to see round Eddie Nketiah. And also, yes, Lindelof. But that's irrelevant. It's irrelevant that Lindelof's there. Eddie Nketiah is offside and he's having to lean round him to see the ball. And because of that, he doesn't make the save because the ball then goes the other side. He dives full stretch, misses it by inches. So if Eddie Nketiah isn't there, and yes, Lindelof too, if they're not there, does he make the save? Yes, he does. So Eddie Nketiah, Lindelof becomes an irrelevance now because Eddie Nketiah is offside and he's the first person he sees who is in his way, who he has to lean round. I don't know how this could be more simple. And yet they went to the referee and he still deemed it to be a goal. I don't know. I mean, yeah, just mental. But again, I think this comes back and maybe, look, because we do see it from a goalkeeper's perspective, and no doubt De Gea was fuming. I would have been absolutely fuming if they'd agreed that the player was offside and I'm having to lean round him and that's why I conceded. He is absolutely interfering with play, and how anybody can see it any differently, yeah, just beyond me.
Well, do you know what? Part of the issue, I think, you said that David De Gea would have been fuming. I don't think he was fuming enough, and maybe that's, you know, a bigger issue with the way that Manchester United are at the moment. But there were no major appeals there. You know, David De Gea should have been jumping up, going straight to the linesman, going straight to the referee, saying, look at VAR, look at VAR. And I think had he been that vocal in his protests, the outcome might have been slightly different.
Yeah, am I right in saying Kasper Schmeichel did that recently from memory, where I just remember him jumping up, running to the ref, and from memory, I can't remember if he got the decision or not, but actually just making a real point of doing that. But I think that then comes back, you're right, that's then, and actually this brings us back then to Aaron Ramsdale's personality, the different personalities we see from goalkeepers. I think there are certain ones that are that assertive, they will go and make that point. Even if they get booked, they'll make their point so clearly. Whereas I think David De Gea is a very different energy he plays with. Again, he is very laid back. Not really his style to do that. But I think you're right. Had he made a really big thing of it, there is a good chance that they would have looked at it in a little bit more detail.
Let's head on over to the Brentford Community Stadium. Brentford 0, Tottenham 0. And talk about David Raya, purely from a distribution point of view, actually, because as we know, he started the season incredibly well, pivotal to the way that Brentford played, then was out with that knee injury. Alvaro Fernandez came in and did okay, but it was quite noticeable that David Raya wasn't playing because Brentford even had a bit of a slump when he was out of the team. He's come back in and took him a few games, fair to say, as it normally would do when you're coming back from injury. But I just think this game as a standalone just showed how important he is to the way that Brentford play.
Yeah, just so calm. I think that's probably the word that I would use. Just really, really calm in possession. Again, just going to keep coming back to the email we received at the start of the show. But I just think that in terms of what I like to see personally from a goalkeeper is that calmness, being so assured in decision-making, in the decisions that you make. And certainly David Raya has got that. There was one side volley in particular. Is it Raya or Raya? Because I've always called him Raya, by the way, but I'm aware.
Yeah, I've always called him Raya, to be fair. But at the weekend, they were calling him Raya. So for some reason, I've just been very impressionable and followed suit. Though.
Yeah, just go for it. You're very easily influenced, apparently. There was a side volley that he hit in particular that I just wanted to, because it was a lovely, and I want to see more of this. I think that this is a really nice form of distribution, obviously. We see it a lot, the side volley into the wingers, but it was that kind of almost like the half one where you chop down on it and it was like a golf shot. You know, he's kind of cut it to the right winger to the point where it bounces and the whoever it was who was receiving the ball wasn't aware that it was going to cut.
He didn't read it.
He didn't read it because it's hit the turf and almost gone backwards because there's that much slice on it. But it just reminded me of like a golf shot with a little bit of fade, a little bit of cut, you know, into a green and just seeing it check back. It was just, and I just think that actually, again, a form of distribution where it's too far to throw the ball out to the right winger, but you might have that right winger or left winger breaking and they're not that far advanced. So you can't throw it. You might do the little punch half volley, but we don't really see that anymore. So if anything, that side volley like that, where it goes head height the whole way with a lot of chop on it and you can drop it in just short of the halfway with a bit of check to the right. Brilliant form of distribution. And I thought he nailed that, like you say, all afternoon. I thought his distribution was very good. And I do think recently, as you say, the difference he has made to that team, it's probably been the most notable. You know, I know we spoke years ago of, was it West Ham, when Roberto came in and we saw a real difference between goalkeepers then when Roberto came in. I think it was similar to an extent, nothing massively against Fernandez, but I just think that David Raya is that good and that suited to the way that Brentford play. Be really interested to see what Brentford do this summer because, you know, for them, they've been brilliant when it comes to recruitment. Recruitment of a goalkeeper for them is so key because they need such a niche type of goalkeeper. Hopefully for them, no doubt they'll hold on to David Raya and hold on to him for a long period of time because I think there aren't many goalkeepers of his mould.
Just to finish, a couple more in the Premier League. The game involving Newcastle and Norwich. Good performance from Martin Dubravka. Tim Krul playing out from the back and conceding there, Bruno Guimaraes with a very good finish. And Chelsea 1, West Ham 0. Jorginho, he's back with a penalty that was saved by Lucas Fabianski, who made a couple of good saves in that game. Chelsea did win the game, of course. Fabianski as well, a goalkeeper who at the end of the show we're going to come back to and raise an interesting point, aren't we?
Indeed, we are. I want to give massive credit to Fabianski for this because I think you know, when he's taken the penalty, there were the usual comments that you get. It's like a back pass, really weak penalty, etc., etc. But when he scores, it's a really weak penalty. You know, the whole point is that he reads the goalkeeper and he puts it in the other corner. And normally he passes it with such little pace, yet it just nestles in the corner, and that's therefore a great penalty. Sometimes it goes wrong, but it wasn't necessarily that it went wrong. It was just that Fabianski, it's the whole cat and mouse. And Fabianski waited. And actually what he did, if you watch really slowly, as the penalty's taken, he sinks. So he doesn't go right or left. He just sinks a little bit lower, knowing that the chances are, even if Jorginho doesn't see him move, he's then still not going to be able to get that much power, because he does the whole jump before he takes the penalty. He's not then going to be able to generate that much power. So as long as he can stay... And he's not going to put it high, realistically. It's going to go in one of the bottom corners. So you just see Fabianski. I think it's brilliantly intelligent how he just dips a little bit lower, takes up a real squat position, and then Jorginho doesn't hit the corner. But I think even if he does, I think Fabianski from that position can explode and won't be too far. So it just means that Jorginho's technique, if goalkeepers do what Fabianski did, he's going to have to hit right in the corner to score. And if it's not right in the corner, do the Fabianski technique, and you will have a great chance of making the save. So I thought it was really intelligent goalkeeping, very, very good goalkeeping. And as you say, not many save a Jorginho penalty. Obviously Pickford in the Euros, and he did a very similar technique, interestingly, Pickford.
Just realised that's two of the hop, skip and jumpers that missed this weekend, isn't it? So Jorginho missed, well, Jorginho had his saved, and Bruno Fernandes missed his. There was a penalty as well in midweek. I think it was Corne, wasn't it, of Burnley. I don't know whether you saw that one. He dragged that wide. That might have been against West Ham as well. But I think that he stopped in that one. It would have been interesting had that gone in to see whether they would have pulled it back or not, because he stalled so much that I think he actually stopped.
Mm. Well, just to mention the Fernandes one, because actually Fernandes did everything right in the penalty, and actually Aaron Ramsdale did go early. So ordinarily, Fernandes, you know, that's where you do just roll it into the corner. And if anything, he's tried to be too precise to put it right in the corner. Had he done what Jorginho did, he would have scored. And I think that's where, you know, I'm always very, very keen to compliment a goalkeeper when you save a penalty from someone who takes it like that. Because, again, I'm sure goalkeepers listening in, if you face someone who takes a penalty like they do, I've mentioned Heider Helgerson, I'm sure, many times on this show. Ivan Toney is another brilliant example of someone who does it. If you can save one of their penalties, I will always give huge, huge credit to the goalkeeper.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Into the championship for the EFL overview. Just a few more of these left this season, and we'll start at Bournemouth. Goal line technology. Now, Mark Travers made a save that wasn't, unfortunately. I think this may be the first time that we've ever seen this. Have you seen this before, where a goalkeeper has made a save, celebrated, the striker's done absolutely nothing, but the goal has been given?
It was bizarre. And when you've watched it again and again and again, you're thinking they've got this decision wrong. Like, it's a brilliant save. The speed at which he moves to his right, fingertips to claw it out of the goal. Fantastic. And then, of course, they do the replay with the goal line technology. It looks like we're talking millimetres. The funny thing is that, of course, before goal line technology, as you say, no one would ever have even questioned it. You know, everyone would have just been talking about what a fantastic save it was. And it genuinely would not have been questioned, because it did look like a brilliant save. So yeah, incredibly unlucky, but according to goal line technology, it was over by a few millimetres.
Swansea's Andrew Fisher, an important save made even more important, as I think it was, 20 seconds later, his side had scored that equaliser against Middlesbrough. They nearly won it, had it not been for the fingertips of Luke Daniels. What a save this was.
Yeah, brilliant save. Really top save from Luke Daniels, and certainly from Swansea's point of view. In fact, for both of these teams, of course, both with a chance of the playoffs, Middlesbrough more so than Swansea. So a result that didn't really suit either. But as you mentioned, both goalkeepers making key saves. Really good save from Andy Fisher. Just one of those where he's just dropped to his line. It's going between his legs. Managed to get his knee down very quickly in order to make the save. And of course, when you score within a couple of minutes, it's always that much more important.
Ben Wilson, a rare run out for Coventry. We often see this towards the end of the season, don't we? And a penalty save in injury time at West Brom, who have also turned their attentions to David Button now for the foreseeable future. What's the story there?
Yeah, first and foremost, excellent save from Wilson. Full stretch to his right. I know that I read some of the reports afterwards, and a lot of credit going to goalkeeper coach Aled Williams for the research that was done prior to this. But yeah, very, very good save. And David Button has come in for Sam Johnston. Another really good display against Blackpool. Of course, we haven't spoke about his performances in the last couple of games, given that we haven't been on for a couple of weeks. But yeah, they have decided, which I think you've seen with a few teams, certainly teams that don't have anything to play for, no relegation, no promotion, it is the perfect opportunity. And we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, and we've now seen it. And certain goalkeepers, i.e. David Button, have stepped in and done very, very well, where you do get that opportunity to step in and stake a real claim for next season. And certainly it looks like Wilson has done that from what I've seen. Obviously, Simon Moore's been excellent for Coventry this season. Dylan Phillips, I know we've mentioned. There's a few others as well that have had their chance, and it is a perfect time of the season to do so.
And another gent who had his chance was Harry Eisted. Championship debut at Luton Town at the weekend. Quite a goalkeeper crisis they've had there. I thought that he was very accomplished against Blackpool. A real front-footed performance, I think you could say. Really good distribution. He's very adept with the ball at his feet. It's the first time I've ever seen him for 90 minutes, and I thought he commanded his box throughout. Very good.
Yeah, huge credit to him, because it's been a crazy situation at Luton. I suppose along with QPR, you know, you look at their luck with goalkeepers this season, it hasn't been lucky at all. And I mean, on that note, just want to send best wishes to James Shea, because it was a really bad injury that he got. In fact, I watched that game live last week, and it was, you could tell at the time it was a nasty one. I mean, how he managed to get up during the game and try to play on when you've now heard the extent of the injury is beyond me, you know, and credit to him for trying. But we do wish him well. I think it'll be quite a lengthy recovery from that one. But then, of course, Luton find themselves in the position where potentially looking for an emergency loan, but credit to Harry Eisted, he stepped in, did well against Cardiff, did well again in this game. So it will be interesting now as to whether they stick with him or still look at potentially bringing in emergency loan for the last couple of games and potentially the playoffs.
Just a couple more bits to hark back to from midweek as well on the Championship, just because I thought they were worth talking about. Dan Iversen, triple save against Millwall. So many saves he's made like this season. But you don't see many double leg saves. He's having a great season. He's linked with All in Sundry going into the summer. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And Dan Bentley, Bristol City's win at Stoke. A few big saves, a clean sheet. But more importantly, a scuffle with Jacob Brown. And more than a scuffle, I think you'd call it. I don't think I've seen anything like this in recent times.
It was really bizarre. Firstly, the save to his right-hand side was exceptional. Header, ball whipped in, drops to his line, header to his right-hand side. How he's managed to get a hand to it, I'll never know. And then, yeah, he took up a bit of WWE, I think, where they ended up, essentially, the ball's going out of play. They're going over the advertising hoardings, and one grabs the other, and Jacob Brown then grabs Dan Bentley. Then Dan Bentley retaliates, and it ends up being, as they're going over the hoardings, the only question is, who's going to body slam who? And in the end, Bentz just gets the better of him and manages to turn him and body slams him. And it wasn't the most usual scene, and there was obviously a little bit of barging and what have you. Both got bookings and soon made up, so it was all fine. I think it was just one of those moments, though. It's just so unusual in that you're both going over the advertising hoardings at the same time. And what do you do in that situation? You know, and it just so happened in this one, they just grabbed each other for dear life and tried to protect themselves.
Moving over to League One, where Michael Cooper finished up on the road with a double save to keep Wigan at bay. That one ended one apiece to keep Argyle in the playoff race. They'd taken the lead through a free kick, which Ben Amos maybe feels like he should have saved. Toby Savin did keep hold of a lofted ball over the top as Accrington beat Lucan. However, he did so outside of his area and was duly dismissed. His second red card in a month.
Yeah, indeed. A few talking points. Firstly, Michael Cooper, as you say, a couple of great saves in this one. And Team of the Year. Are we going to talk about Team of the Year, actually, Matthew? I meant to ask you that.
We can do, Richard. Go on.
So, Michael Cooper, Team of the Year, League One Team of the Year. In fact, we'll mention these briefly now. So Lee Nichols got the award for the championship, which a huge well done to him. I think he's leading the league for both clean sheets and saves. Just an extraordinary season that he's had. Michael Cooper given the award in League One. And Jojo Wallacott has been awarded it in League Two for Swindon Town. So a massive well done to those three. Of course, Jojo had the involvement with Ghana at the African Nations and, of course, has helped Ghana make the World Cup as well. So certainly all three of these actually for different reasons. Certainly Lee Nichols moving from MK, where he wasn't getting that much game time last season, to then step up into the championship, to now be at a team that are pushing for promotion. And as I say, to have the season he's had, massive well done. Jojo, who has been at Bristol City for so many years, couldn't quite break through, has now gone to Swindon. And again, we talk about it so many times in this podcast, but sometimes it takes a move like that where suddenly you are the main man. You are number one at a team. You manage to get those games in, and we're really seeing what Jojo is all about right now. And Michael Cooper, you know, getting so many plaudits, certainly in recent weeks. Some of the performances have been excellent. Big reason as to why Plymouth are up the top end of the table, and no doubt he'll have lots of interest in him this summer.
How high do you think he can go, Cooper? To where?
It would be very interesting. I mean, at his age, to have the number of games, and this is where, you know, you see different routes that goalkeepers take. The stereotypical one that we see now is Premier League. You get your loans, and then eventually you come back to the Premier League club and break through. I think that the likes of Michael Cooper, Jack Stevens, there's a few younger goalkeepers in League One, League Two, that are doing it the other way around, which is a bit harder because you now need to get that move to the Premier League club, and you need the Premier League or Championship club to invest whatever it might cost, which isn't going to be cheap for these types of goalkeepers. So I guess it depends on how the summer plays out, if someone's willing to invest the amount of money that they'll need to invest in order to bring Michael Cooper in, and then whether they bring them into play. So is it one where he moves up to the Championship to be a number one, or is it the type of maybe a top six Premier League club that will bring him in order to loan him out to the Championship? You know, there's no right or wrong, but ultimately he does need to continue his progression. Ideally, if he wants to get to the Premier League ASAP, I would suggest that he needs to be a number one in the Championship next season somehow, whether that is on loan or on a permanent. So, yeah, I get the impression it's quite a big summer for him. The other one I just wanted to discuss was the Toby Savin red card, and I felt so sorry for him. One of these where through ball, we spoke earlier about David Raya hitting that side volley that just checked back. This was one of them where he's held his position at the edge of the box. He's just waiting for the ball to come in the box. It just wouldn't quite get there. And he has that moment of panic where he just reaches out, grabs the ball, pulls it into the box and goes down with it, just hoping that maybe the referee hasn't seen it or that maybe he's just inside the box. But yeah, unfortunately for him, he was just outside. And of course, with that comes a red card.
Doesn't matter though, because they won. So all is forgotten. Does not matter one jot. And it could have been a keeper caper, but we're actually going to go for this.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So AFC Wimbledon and Nick Zanev, but not just Nick Zanev here. His manager, Mark Bowen, and all the pundits thereafter who haven't quite grasped what's happened here. This is another one of those where you're thinking, did you not see the same thing that I saw? Because Nick Zanev has come and collected a cross. He's been fouled. The referee has given a free kick. Nick Zanev then gets up after being treated. The referee blows his whistle for the free kick. Nick Zanev gets completely confused and thinks that, I don't know, he's been playing or something. So takes three touches before he actually launches the ball. And the referee says, hang on a second, mate, it's a free kick. You can't do that. And so then Fleetwood are given an indirect free kick from which they score to equalise and potentially send or condemn really AFC Wimbledon to relegation. But Mark Bowen's issue was, well, he didn't hear the whistle, he didn't know. And then the pundits were all saying, well, you know, he just didn't know, he didn't properly hear the whistle, he didn't understand what was going on. It was a free kick. So that's it. That's the end of the story. I don't understand why no one could quite grasp what had happened.
No, it was really, really bizarre. And like, When I first seen it, I did wonder whether, because it was quite a nasty landing that Nick Zanev had, whether, as you say, whether he was a bit disorientated, whether there was any concussion or something. Because if he was aware, and the only thing is then I could say is that he couldn't have been aware that it was a free kick. He must have thought it was a drop ball, but that would have been a very, a very deliberate act from the referee to come and drop the ball at his feet to then play on. It wouldn't just have been a case of carry on, that doesn't happen. So then you would surely know in that moment that it's a free kick. But whatever's happened, he's a bit disorientated and isn't quite sure what's going on, and felt that in that moment he was okay to dribble the ball, because it was bizarre. It was, as you say, referee's given a free kick, ball's put down for the free kick, and he just starts dribbling the ball. And then what does the referee do? If the referee feels like he has given the free kick and that everybody's aware that he's given the free kick, then of course he's got to blow up and say, well, you can't do that. So therefore it is now an indirect free kick against you. And as you say, so costly. But and you can only see so much from the footage, so it'd be really interesting to actually speak to Nick himself and just understand exactly what was going on in that moment. I can only think that he thought it was a drop ball in that moment, hence why he's decided to dribble the ball.
On to League Two, where James Bellshaw and Luke McGee must take a bow. Two of a number of very good goalkeepers in League Two this season. It was goalless at the Memorial Stadium. Forest Green Rovers go up as a result. Bristol Rovers still have hopes of going up automatically with them. And speaking of good goalkeepers, Cam Dawson, he made the decision as well. We speak about goalkeepers making decisions for their career to drop to the bottom tier on loan from Sheffield Wednesday. Good save at 0-0 with Rochdale for Exeter. They won 2-0. They could also go up automatically. Decent season from him. And I want to flag Paul Farman. He'd have been included in the previous two rounds of games for recent highlights. Again, decent all season. He stepped up in recent games with big results. Have meant Barrow have stayed up. And a penalty save in their win over Sutton. And finally, Alex Bass, another goalkeeper who dropped down to the bottom tier on loan at Bradford from Portsmouth. This goes down, unfortunately, as an own goal. A bit harsh against Scunthorpe, but didn't matter as Bradford won the game.
Yeah, so a few of those goalkeepers in particular. We mentioned that Jojo Wallacott got goalkeeper of the season, but certainly Cam Dawson, Luke McGee and Bellshaw as well would have all felt that they'd have had a chance of that accolade, because brilliant seasons from all three of them. Cam Dawson, as you mentioned, can be seen as quite a risk to drop down from the Championship to League Two, especially with the number of games that Cam Dawson has. But he's gone down there and just, you know, he's racked up another 40-50 games, been excellent for them all season. They've been absolutely delighted. And as you say, may even have a promotion by the end of the season if he keeps doing what he's doing. And certainly McGee and Bellshaw, the only word that I wrote was masterclass. You know, I thought both of them were excellent in this game. And as you mentioned, both have been a big, big reason as to why both teams are up the top of the table. I felt for Alex Bass, it was, as the balls come back, you could sense that he wasn't overly comfortable in that situation. He was looking to play. There wasn't anything obvious on at the time. This is one of those ones that no doubt if the pundits were watching it, they'd have been, you know, just telling him to kick it first time, put it out of play, whatever it might be. But it is difficult because, again, it goes back to what we've discussed so many times in this pod, which is ball comes back. You are now trained to think, what is there? What's on? And in this moment, he didn't look overly comfortable. It wasn't a great touch. Then he's tried to play, took a little bit too long, and probably similar to the Zach Steffen one not so long ago. It was a little bit like that. And the fact that it was given as an own goal, I do think was a little bit harsh. And Paul Farman, brilliant penalty save. Really was full stretch to his left to get fingertips to it. Very, very good. Clean Sheet Club. Right, we really are at the business end. It is time for this. We start in the Premier League. Kasper Schmeichel, blankety blank. Emi Martinez, double figures. Martin Dubravka, 3-4. David Raya, the bee's knees. Hugo Lloris, boss. Nick Pope, still hope. Edouard Mendy, dope. Alisson, nope. Into the Championship, Nathan Baxter, back in, back clean. Brees Samba, still in, still clean. Wes Fodringham, so clean, he's reflecting. Joe Bursic, returning to cleanliness. David Button, clean for the first time since January. Ben Wilson, clean for the first time this season. Craig McGillivray, back-to-back. Jonathan Mitchell, hanging on in there. Jamie Cumming, not a shot to save, keeps the goals away. David Stockdale, 7-11. Into League Two, Paul Farman, finishing in fine form. James Belshaw, form of his life. Luke McGee, up, up and away. Cam Dawson, big gulp. Joe Cracknell, awesome. Lewis Ward, on the board for 2022. Nathan Bishop, ever-present. Christy Pym, Lone Ranger. Cole Rushworth, proving his worth.
Lovely stuff. Well, you said we are getting to the business end of the season. Do you want the table?
I do.
So gritty. Right, top of the pile still with just two games to play is Liam Roberts on 21 clean sheets. Now, below him, you have Alisson and Luke McGee, both on 19. Alisson in 31 games, McGee in 43 games. You then have five goalkeepers on 18. Edison in 32, Lee Nichols and Cam Dawson in 42, Michael Cooper and David Stockdale in 45. Now, I've gone through all the possible permutations regarding the clean sheet club table. That's the exciting thing I did last night, Richard, because there are three games left for Exeter in League Two. So Dawson could still equal the 21 totaled by Liam Roberts. If Liam Roberts doesn't get any more clean sheets this season, that is. League One is done next weekend, so that rules out Cooper and Stockdale. They're out of it. In the Championship, Huddersfield have two to play. So Luke Nichols, who has 18, he's out. West Fotheringham was on 17. Sheffield United have two to play. He's out. Bournemouth have four to play. Travers is on 17. So again, if Roberts doesn't get any more clean sheets, Travers could equal him. We could have an epic tie at the end of the season. And then in the Premier League, City and Liverpool, five games each to play. The most they can get to is 24 for Alisson and 23 for Edison. So I would say, based on current form for the pair, Liam Roberts could do with probably bagging two in his last two.
Yeah, certainly with City and Liverpool being in the form that they're in and Edison and Alisson being in the form that they're in, I think you might be right.
Right, just a few bit of global glovesmen, I think we're going to randomly call this, just come to me right now. A bit of news on goalkeepers from around the world. First up, Kamil Grabara. Remember him?
Of course.
There's a name. On loan at Huddersfield a couple of seasons ago, was a Liverpool goalkeeper, of course, spoke about him quite a few times on the podcast. Well, this season, he's been ever-present for FC Copenhagen. Now, a couple of weeks ago, he kept his seventh successive clean sheet in the league. That was in a win over FC Midtjylland. It took him to 704 minutes without conceding. He then extended that to 763 minutes, but conceded in the 59th minute against Silkeborg. The reason I'm telling you this is because that is a new record in the Danish Super League.
Wow. Well, there you go. Big well done to him.
Big well done to him. The record had stood for 23 years, previously held by Jan Hofmann, 678 minutes. That was back in 1999. Over in Spain, Real Oviedo goalkeeper Joan Femenia. He was attacked, absolutely mauled, by Sporting Gijón players. It was at the end of the game. This was, we should say, the Asturias derby. So it's always a bit feisty. But goodness me, poor bloke had zero protection from his players for absolutely ages. The Gijón players just grappled with him. It was horrible to watch.
It was bizarre. There was a moment where there was at least five that were grabbing him at one time. It was more the fact, as you say, the lack of teammates that came to help him out in this moment. I think, yeah, if I'd have gone into the change room afterwards, I would have been asking the question.
And here, Southampton have just loaned their B-team goalkeeper coach, Ryan Flood, to Dundee United for the remainder of the season. Now, Tony Cage was at Dundee United. He is now Newcastle's head of academy goalkeeping. Just thought this was an interesting story because you don't often hear, and we spoke earlier on in the season, I can't remember the gentleman, I think it was in Scotland as well, where a coach had come in a temporary basis for a team. I can't remember who it was, to be fair, but this, yeah, Flood, who is established at Southampton and well revered there, has gone to Dundee United for the remainder of the season. A goalkeeper coach loan.
Very unusual. I quite like this, though, in that obviously I did see that Tony Kay, great gig for him to get himself back to Newcastle as a 23s goalkeeper coach. And I guess it's one of them where rather than rush and bring someone in without going through the process that you do need to go to bring a goalkeeper coach in, to approach some of these Premier League Championship clubs where you know they might have goalkeeper coaches that they can allow to go and get that kind of experience. Yeah, I think this is a really nice idea. So I hope we see more of this.
Okay, and finally, just a discussion point ahead of West Ham playing in the Europa League this Thursday. We haven't had a chance to talk about the FA Cup semi-final last week involving Liverpool and Manchester City. Zach Steffen, of course, caught out by Sadio Mane in that game. It was a huge talking point at the time, and an article came out by Martin Samuel on the Mail Online. I just thought this was worth bringing up because we've spoken about this in the podcast before, but not in as much length and not actually taken this stance in that I think it was during the FA Cup, wasn't it? When, you know, I said there are some goalkeepers who play as number ones in the league, but you get that juicy FA Cup tie away to a Premier League club and you actually want to play in those games, but you don't because the second choice goalkeeper invariably plays in those games. Now, we are at a situation where Zach Steffen has been picked for an FA Cup semi-final for Manchester City and has made an error in the way that he did. And whether Edison would have made the error, who knows? We saw in the week previous, he had a similar situation with Diogo Jota and was very calm and didn't make the error. Now, West Ham play in the Europa League on Thursday. They have a great chance of winning that tournament and qualifying for the Champions League. The article by Martin Samuel was just focusing on the fact that the whole swapping your goalkeepers for cup competitions and sticking to it maybe shouldn't be as, I don't know, rigid as it is, because West Ham now don't really have anything to play for in the Premier League, yet Fabianski is playing in the Premier League and it's likely Alphonse Areola will play in the Europa League. So what's your take here? Should goalkeepers who originally were to be playing in the Premier League now be used as cup keepers and it's the other way round? What do we make of this?
Yeah, it's not a simple one. It certainly isn't black and white, because I think that, I mean, ultimately it comes down to the belief that the manager has in the backup goalkeeper. You know, and if he's looking at this and thinking, actually, Areola's got the momentum with him. You know, he's played the cup games so far. He's done as well as he has. He's going to be so pumped up for this game, whereas Fabianski's been very much focused on the league. He might actually think that it makes more sense, and there's such little difference between the two goalkeepers, to stick with Areola rather than, you know, an extra game for Fabianski. And Fabianski might not feel that he's played a huge part up to this point. So psychologically, how is he going into this game? So I think it's not black and white, because then at the same time, like you say, you use the Liverpool Man City example, where Liverpool decide to go with Alisson, whereas City decide to stick with Steffen. Then, of course, after the game, it's the easiest thing to say, oh, it's because of that. And of course, when Zach Steffen has a moment or two to forget, then it's very easy to look at that and give that as the reason. But then how many times have we seen it where the backup goalkeeper has played and has done very well, i.e. Kelleher playing in the League Cup final, for instance, and did brilliantly well. And no one talks about that now. They're very much focused on the fact that that City should have changed it and put Edison back in. So I think it will always give, and it just, I suppose, depends how much David Moyes cares about that as an idea, in that if they do lose and Areola is at fault, then it will be labelled against David Moyes. Yet if David Moyes makes the change and Fabianski makes the error that costs them the game, he won't get criticism for it. So I guess it's whether he's bothered about that. Personally, I would play Areola. I think that the difference between the two goalkeepers, I think they're different goalkeepers, different strengths. I think that Areola would have been coming to West Ham thinking at some point he may get a chance anyway. Top goalkeeper. So I think given that there isn't much difference between the two and he's performed well in the Europa game so far, I think they will give him the nod. And personally, I agree with that.
Okay. It's just an interesting stance, isn't it, I think, to suddenly go, actually, should it be completely flipped and your number one goalkeeper be used as the cup goalkeeper for teams that realistically aren't going to have a chance of winning a title in the top flight? Do you suddenly flip it and go, okay, well, do you know what? We'll go all out in the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup and the Europa League.
Do you know what? And this is why, again, I said just it isn't black and white. It's just never, ever that simple, because I think that, Yeah, look, you could look at it West Ham, of course, to get to this stage of the competition, then yeah, surely you have to go with your strongest team. But it's never quite as easy, because effectively your strongest team in this situation could be Areola in goal because of what I've just said, having the momentum with him. So it's not as black and white as there is, you know, one size fits all. There's reasons that managers change teams based on who they're playing, based on competitions, based on previous gameplay, etc. So he will put out what he believes is the best team to get the result, whether that is Areola or Fabianski. I believe in this situation it will be Areola, but it's never black and white, because then there are other examples where maybe the number one is deemed to be quite far ahead of the number two. Maybe the number two did play in the competition up to a certain point, and then at that point they decide to put the number one back in, which again is okay, providing the communication is there. I think the big risk you have with all of this is certainly from a number two's point of view, where you are given a chance and you feel like you've been a major reason as to why you've progressed in a competition, to suddenly then not play a game and not have it communicated to you. That's tough to take. But I think if you have the communication with the manager and they explain their reasons for doing it, you might not agree, but at least you'll understand the reasoning behind it.
Okay, Richard, I think that is us done for another week. Hopefully not as long before we're back on the airwaves. I shall be cured, hopefully, by next week. Still a bit rough, to be fair, but hopefully feeling fit and healthy as of next week. And we forgot to mention at the top of the show that you got a nice little shout-out on the old Fozcast, didn't you?
Yes, a big thank you to Kasper Schmeichel, who did mention us, where they're having a conversation actually about pundits, and Kasper was being quite open in that he doesn't necessarily listen to pundits all that much anymore because of the, well, I would assume, the knowledge around goalkeeping. So he said he listens to other things, and he did. He named the Richard Lee podcast, which I loved that he called it that. I love that he called it that.
I just knew that was the one thing that you pick up from that, yes. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, we actually, and that's the other big news, we are going to rename the Goalkeepers Union podcast as of next week.
And suddenly, no one's listening. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.